Hey folks, TJ Lauerman, aka That Sports Gamer here, and before we get into this week's Press Row podcast, I wanted to let you know that coming up on November 7th, I'll be participating in my 6th Extra Life Charity Marathon. Extra Life is just like any other marathon, except instead of walking or running, I'll be playing video games for 24 straight hours to support my local Children's Miracle Network Hospital. Thanks to help from some great companies this year, I'll be doing giveaways to people who donate to my campaign. Some of the things you'll be entered to win are copies of Super Mega Baseball, Dive Kick, Elgato Game Capture Cards, and much more. So please head over to extra-life.org/participant/thatsportsgamer to find out more information and to donate. Stats show that 62 children enter a Children's Miracle Network hospital for treatment every minute, so anything you donate will go a long way. Children's Miracle Network Hospitals is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and all donors will receive an IRS-compliant tax receipt. If you have any questions or want to sign up to participate in Extra Life, please reach out to me on Twitter, @ThatSportsGamer, and be sure to check out my page at extra-life.org/participant/ThatSportsGamer. Now, on to the show.
Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, the definitive sports video game show brought to you by Hit the Pass. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Well, all right, we are back. It is the Press Row Podcast, and we got some good friends back in the fold. Chris Sanner from Operation Sports is here. Owen Good from Polygon is here. Brian Weedive from Pasta Padre and Hit the Pass is here. Chris Sanner, how are you, my friend? It's been a while.
Rich, I first want to congratulate your Mets on making the World Series. Very good job
by
those guys.
We just said we weren't going to talk about the game that was being played tomorrow, but the show's not getting posted till the next day, so it's all crazy.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Rich. I just felt like jinxing it, and you gave me a rule that I just figured I would not follow.
He waited literally 9 seconds to just start breaking the rules after he comes back from his, Chris, let's be honest, you were suspended from the show. I wasn't going to get into that, but yeah, since you threw down the gauntlet, you're now coming back from a suspension. You're on probation and things aren't looking so good.
I know. Well, I mean, in all honesty, I was suspended because I actually refused to take that big, large check payment all you guys got from that game company. I don't even remember what that company was. So, you know, just because I had some dignity and some ethical virtue, I am being cast off into the netherworld of podcasting. I don't know. Well, I don't know what this means, but I'm going to stay. I'm going to stay here and have a good time.
Well, it's good to have you. Oh, good. It's also been a while since we talked to you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm fine. I got sick there for a while, actually. I had an infected toe. It looked like I had made a legal slide into second base and Ruben Tejada had stepped on it.
Are you kidding me? Kidding me?
Jeez. Oh. No. But I did... And I'm sure you can hear it in my voice whenever I laugh too hard. I have been kind of under the weather, but I'm recovering and I'm back now. And it's good to be back on the show. Sorry that I was away for so long.
It's all good. Brian Weedye, welcome again, my friend.
Yeah, we talk often, so I have no hilarious anecdotes or jokes to be made at this point. I apologize.
That's all right. So before we get into some of the topics for tonight, I just want to go around. We talked about it, Brian and I, quite a bit last week, but we haven't talked to you for a while, Chris Sanner. The sports avalanche has finally descended upon us. You've got a whole bunch of different games that you could be playing. So what are you playing right now when you're able to just sit down and play a game for fun?
Well, actually, believe it or not, I'm still playing Madden. I did not think I would say that, but I'm still playing Madden. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'm still playing the golf club. I've been rotating between it and Rory a little bit. So I guess the two early games I'm still playing, and I've been playing a lot of FIFA as well. So those have been the three I've really settled on and am just really enjoying this year. I'll probably really get in the NBA 2K as basketball heats up, but I'm kind of enjoying the more summerish outdoorsy kind of sports for now.
All right, so let's talk about that. When you're playing Madden, what are you playing? Have you descended into the realms of Ultimate Team? Or are you playing an offline franchise? Like, what's your, you know, when you're fired up, what are you playing?
Here's the deal. I have tried Ultimate Team in every game, like every time, and I think this is going to be the time, this is going to be the year that my mind changes on these modes. And I every time, the same thing happens. This is the most boring thing I think I've ever done. And I cast it away, and I go back to franchise mode. And that's where I'm at in Madden. I'm in year three with my Kansas City Chiefs. Fiction is a whole lot more fun than reality right now. So I'm having a lot of fun with that. And with Rory, I've been playing my career, and it's been a lot of fun as well. But I just really would like to have some more course variety and such. But I guess we'll talk about that in a little bit, won't we?
We will. And you also mentioned the golf club. Are you doing the seasons? Are you just battling your buddies like ghosts? Like when you play the golf club, how are you playing that?
I think the golf club had it figured out as far as how to keep people like at least like me hooked. And that's get a good group of guys who love playing the game and keep competing with each other on, you know, almost an infinite amount of courses. And yeah, I have been playing against Ghost. I've been playing season modes as well. You know, I've been hopping in and out of that a little bit, but just competing against guys with the Ghost and trying to lower, you know, keep my score lowering and such. That's just that provides a never ending challenge if you want to keep it that way.
So hands down, you know, you got to make a decision. Which way do you go, Rory McIlroy or the golf club?
I would go golf club just because Rory McIlroy has Rory is, I guess the best way to put it, Rory would be my choice if there were about 10 more courses and about 15 more golfers. But I mean, it feels so limited. It feels like you're doing a lot of the same stuff over and over again. So the golf club, if you want to play a course you've never played before, it's not hard to do that and give yourself a new challenge.
And when you're playing FIFA, same thing. Are you playing a career? Are you doing a single player? I from the sound of the previous conversation, you're not doing FUT. So when you fire up FIFA, what are you doing and what club are you using?
Oh, I haven't really dived into the manager type mode yet, but I'll probably resume. I'm probably going to do a Premier League career here very shortly. I think that's on my list of things to do this week. So I don't know. I think Premier League, though, is where I'm going to come down on. I've always played like in the lower English league with a little club named Southend United, and I've always enjoyed playing with them. But I think this is the year that I just decide to play with some of the more talented teams in a manager mode and just kind of have a lot of fun with it.
Oh, and good. What does your sports game rotation look like these days?
Well, I'm playing a lot of FIFA, actually, which is kind of a welcome change from past years where I would sort of play FIFA and not really understand or dig it. But for some reason, and like I said in my review and like I said on previous shows, it just clicks with me this year. So I've really been having a lot of fun with that. I slipped back into to Rory McIlroy PGA Tour to play East Lake. That's a very challenging course. It's a 70. Par 70 course, and it's really long. It plays a lot longer in this game than it did in its predecessors. Anyway, and that's a real challenge for me to figure out. I'd forgotten sort of, you know, the course layout, so it's been nice to get back into that. And then, man, I went down to Charlotte a week ago and saw the Xfinity Series race with a friend down there. And I came back home and dusted off NASCAR 15 of all things.
The 360?
On the 360, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And I was all fired up because I was like, man, I'm gonna race. I'm gonna, you know, draft in the corners or pass in the straights. I'm gonna go race Charlotte Motor Speedway. Because it was the spectacle was just great. I don't think I've ever been to a race down at Charlotte Motor Speedway, which is something considering I grew up in this state. I went into the wall on every single turn. The performance motorsports, whether the F1 or the NASCAR games on a console, I mean, it's just, man, you guys know how hard that stuff is. So I had a nice little fling with that and put it away and then played some more FIFA and then played some more golf. And, I've been trying to clear out a backlog of other things here and there. I have so many games, it's just a shame. So.
Yeah, I've decided I don't have a backlog anymore. I just got my front log because if I look at those games I bought and haven't played, it's just ridiculous. So, question for you, Owen, have you tried Forza 6?
No, it's something that I was I had traded in you talk about the sports apocalypse coming and all that other stuff. This is the time of year when you take about four or five games back to the GameStop, you know, for store credit because you got the new ones. And I had a big dump of that and some other things and had enough for like, you know, one game and store credit. And I put it on Battlefront. I had thought about picking up Forza 6. Didn't really think I was going to be playing it that much. I'll probably get that later. But we had great things to say about it over at Polygon. I've heard of good things about it elsewhere. So that'll just have to be something that I get to later.
I'm a big fan. And it's the kind of game where whenever I just want to have some fun for about 15 or 20 minutes, I fire it up. And I just get in there, and there's a wonderful variety. It's very easy for somebody who's not a big racing guy to have fun, which I love. You can make some very simple adjustments that'll just really make it fun for, I don't want to say a noob, but, you know, fun for somebody who likes racing games but who doesn't really understand downforce and, you know, things like that. And also, if you are really into racing, obviously you can really ramp it up. So if you have an opportunity over like a Black Friday or thing and you get a good deal on Forza 6, I would strongly recommend it, especially if you've got any inkling for racing whatsoever.
For what I played of Forza 5, and of course I loved Forza Horizon, which is a completely different beast altogether. I understand that. But the main Forza series, with the assists that it does offer, is something that I think offers a better blend of a truer racing experience without just the punishing demand for fidelity that something like F1 or, again, this NASCAR game, which had been developed by Eutechnics, now is run out of a shop that's in the NASCAR headquarters down in Charlotte. But I think Forza is a little bit more inviting to somebody who wants to take a hot car out and spin it around the track as opposed to somebody who really needs to come prepared to race.
Indeed. Brian Wiedeye, anything changed on your playlist, so to speak?
No, you know, I'm still getting into various areas of NBA 2K16 and then playing in our league in Madden 16. The one thing that's maybe changed is my interest has been re-peaked in Rocket League with the introduction of the DeLorean next week.
Which is just the future. Right.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. 30 years, or no, this is the exact date when they traveled to the future and Back to the Future too, is when the car goes out. So, just kind of a nifty thing for that game, which is a blast no matter what car you're using. But that piece of downloadable content, which would be $2, I'm like, yeah, take my $2. I'm happy to pay for that.
So we've talked a little bit about golf. I want to stay on that. And one of our listeners, the one Rayman, asked the question, with the announcement of four new courses and two new golfers, is this free DLC something that EA Sports will stick with? So that question, along with it, does that does what appears to be a steady stream of free DLC, is that going to keep Rory McIlroy in your video game console? And we'll start with you, Owen.
But I acknowledge that my interest in video game golf is, you know, not the norm. There's something about it that gets into a region of my brain that makes me want to play it whenever I have free moments, just like, you know, what you said about Forza. Whenever you want to do something for 15 minutes, you have a quality experience, you play that. Other people might play Rocket League. Other people might play FIFA. Other people might play Destiny. For me, it's golf, and you know, I'd like to see what the rollout schedule is. They've only said that the stuff is going to be, you know, delivered by March, you know, which is fine. I that's okay. I'm glad that it's all free. I'm glad that they've added in, you know, the extra modes of play. Those aren't obviously necessary if you're a career golfer, but if you're screwing around with friends, it's nice to have skins game. The licensed golfers, the additional two, again, nobody really plays as other people in this, you know, game. And if you're a real big fan, you've probably already ranked up your golfer to 99 or 100 already, and you'll play as yourself online. But the additional courses will keep me interested, especially because they will, you know, I might just park myself at the end of this season and wait for all the courses to arrive so that when I start the next season, the new events that correspond to them are there, because otherwise you have to wait until the next season, you know, starts to find it in your career mode. But that brings it up to 18. Now, four of those are like pure fantasy courses, things that wouldn't be on your tour. But still, you know, when you look at it, I think the final 3 years, as I mentioned in the story of Tiger Woods, there were between 16 and 20 courses that were free on the disc. And so that's a respectable amount that's now playable. Obviously, I want to see them continue, you know, to doing this. I don't know if this means that they're going to have like a year of free DLC, if they're going to do something like, you know, The Witcher, where they promise to, you know, give you this much that's free. And then once they live that out, then they bring in the premium stuff. And if the premium stuff is going to be some of the bigger name courses like Pebble Beach, you know, which is still just sort of like, where the hell is that thing gone? Because it had been such a mainstay on an EA Sports game for two decades.
You know, can I just say something real quick, Owen?
Yeah.
So they said this is the content coming to the game expected by the end of March, which is the end of their fiscal year. If you go back and look at how they supported UFC, another bi-yearly title, that game was supported only through March of that year, and then they were done with it. They moved on to the next one. So that would be my I would suspect that the game is pretty much done after this content. And
I mean, you're right. I guess the thing is, golf represented a greater opportunity for additional transactions than, you know, Fight Night or UFC sure. did in the past. So there's an opportunity there, and you've got to figure that they still have some kind of data sitting around that translates, although I understand it's a completely different engine. I don't know. I still stand behind how we rated Rory McIlroy at launch. You know, you get one bite at the apple. But I'm pleased to see what's happened with it since then. And I think it's a respectable game, and I don't know. I mean, it's not a numbered series, so it's not like we go, well, we'll just wait for next year and see what they do with that. I mean, I don't know when they're going to be coming back to this. I hope that they continue with something that's a little bit more attentive than what's been going on with UFC.
So, Chris Sanner, where has Rory McIlroy landed in the Operation Sports community? You know, for my, you know, I don't get a lot of people talking about it. To me, certainly the episodes and the pieces that we put up about it don't get a lot of, you know, views or feedback, or certainly not as many as others. So I'm curious, you know, where does the game stand right now in the community conversation and Operation Sports, both in popularity and in discussions about its quality and value?
For the most part, experience on Operation Sports is very similar. I mean, it never really, I would say even around release, there wasn't even that much activity, much less, you know, now, so a couple months afterwards. You've got that dedicated small group of guys, you know, that 20 to 40 guys on the boards that will come on and post every now and then about it. But I mean, it really has never really registered as a blip to most people. And I am worried about the franchise because of that. I mean, there just wasn't that much reaction. I really wonder how well the game even sold, to be honest with you. And I don't know. It just seems like people, I mean, for the most part, people enjoyed the game playing it. But the same general consensus was, you know, this is a good, solid game of golf on the course, but the amount of options and stuff that we do not have just doesn't make this game worth $60. And that's been kind of the consensus the whole way through. DLC is going to be helping, but it just really feels like, you know what I mean, from the career mode on down, that this game was really bare bones. And I think people had better options out there for their sports gaming dollar.
You know, there's an interesting article today on GameSpot today, where they interviewed Andrew Wilson, and he was speaking a little bit about, you know, the strategy of EA recently in the last couple of years. And while I'm not, you know, so much concerned about, you know, the putting the players first philosophy and all of that, it certainly sounds good. And I, you know, I certainly believe that they are acting on that by getting, you know, players involved in games earlier and things. We've seen that, you know, particularly with NHL. But one of the things that they really went through is how EA is really paring down its releases and trying to make the ones that it is, releasing be longer, right? You know, engage, keep the users engaged longer. You know, we obviously see it with Madden. It's a full year game. You see it with FIFA. It's a full year game. So, Brian Weedock, what do you think their strategy is with Rory McIlroy for, you know, to keep engagement and to keep the brand, you know, in a place that they want it to be?
That's a good question, because I think we could ask that about what was their strategy with this game at release, because it sure wasn't a great strategy, whatever it was. So the problem that EA has with McIlroy is that the game didn't sell well. And so Owen mentions the idea of paid DLC down the line, maybe after the free DLC. The problem with that is we're coming from, yes, EA was very heavy on DLC with the Tiger Woods games. But the Tiger Woods games back 5, 6, 7 years ago, those were selling in the millions of copies, not in the range of 100 or 200,000. So if you don't have people there to spend money on DLC, especially nearly a year after release, that same amount, those people are not going to be around in the same numbers they were at release. So it's a big issue for them. And I think one idea, of course, is going to be EA Access. If it follows the UFC trajectory, it could be in EA Access by the end of this year or January or February. And then if people are getting into the game that way, then maybe they can sell DLC to them. But this whole schedule of extra content that's coming by the end of March, it's just too little too late, because it's going to be great for the people who already have the game, yeah, to get free extra content in there, but it's not going to make the product compelling enough to get people to go out and buy it if they haven't already.
So Owen, same question to you. What do you think their strategy is sort of long term with this franchise, right? As you said, it's not numbered, so we don't expect a new version next year. You know, where is this going to go, and what do you think that they are going to do, and or what do you think they should do with this franchise to keep it, you know, in a place where, let's face it, not that many years ago, the Tiger Woods franchise was a very popular game that, you know, did quite well in its space.
I don't know, but, you know, to try to source out what I do know, I mean, it you have to remember that. I mean, Brian points out that this hasn't sold as well as the Tiger Woods series, and that's obviously, you know, a salient point. I think it could have been an 8-rated game and it wouldn't have sold as well because it doesn't have Augusta National. I mean, you know, that thing did wonders for this game's appeal and profile and you know, desire among even casual golfers to pick it up. Mm-hmm. But it's also important to remember, you know, the people who buy this stuff are a demographic that's quite different from, you know, even, you know, the hardcore sports video gamers that we appeal to in this podcast. Yeah, obviously, if whole numbers are down, it doesn't really matter, you know, what the demographic is. And it does cut into, you know, the appetite to do premium DLC. But I can't see EA Sports walking away from this, of all things, in the way that it has, you know, UFC. And especially if, yeah, I mean, obviously, if it's still, you know, sinking money into NBA, you know, and keeping people around. Although I do know that, you know, the Tiger Woods guys have been pulled off to do things for Madden and to do things for NBA in the past. Like, you know, the, you know, some of the kicking controls from that were introduced in last year's Madden came from the shot preview in Rory McIlroy, for example. But I don't see them walking away from this considering that they're the only game in town. And yes, I know that we're talking about the golf club, and the golf club has an enormous diversity of courses and user created content. And my personal inability to grasp how to play golf in this game obviously is, I'm in a minority there because so many people play it and love it, but that is a different experience from what EA Sports offers, I think. And I think EA Sports offers a little bit more of a mainstream experience. And I just, it doesn't seem like it's something where they're going, okay, well, we cashed out and we're done with this. And then they fire a bunch of people. And the only thing that they're making down there is NBA and Madden. And everybody's always on a death watch for NBA. I think, you know, EA is a well-funded company that can afford to, you know, endure, I guess, a a transition such as this and get things back on its feet with the subsequent edition. I certainly hope that they do.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't, you know, trying to lead towards a direction of them walking away. I mean, you know, we don't know how much they spent on the game. We don't know how much it sold. We don't know how much, you know, a profit or a loss there was, right? So without any of that information, you know, it's you know, kind of, I mean, it's just you can't even make those kinds of guesses without at least a little information. I guess it's more in just sort of reading into what EA is continuing to do, you know, and you know, they talk about, like, you know, the Netflix model, and we know that EA Access has been a success because they have said on their calls, their investor calls, that EA Access not only has been a success but has been a bigger success. So, you know, the strategy wouldn't, in my mind, isn't necessarily walking away. It's like, if ultimately you're going to offer your games in a Netflix style or EA Access style environment, you want a nice broad selection. And it seems to me that a PGA licensed golf game is that. It just seems to me like the traditional business model of having a $60 golf game doesn't quite work anymore, but having it as one reason to spend $50 or $60 or $70 or $100 a year for access to a suite of games would make it more appealing. Chris Sander, is that crazy, or do you think ultimately that's what may actually be the way that this franchise, you know, sort of continues to exist as we move further and further into a very different way of buying and playing games than we have in the past?
Yeah, I think you're not crazy. You're not off in left field. I, as long as the current model works and makes money, it's not going anywhere. Or until another model comes along that makes more money than the current model in place. Now, I think eventually there's going to be something change with this industry, especially, I mean, even sports games in general. Development's getting really hard to do. I mean, squeezing everything they're trying to squeeze into a year now, the detail needed and such. I mean, and now you're talking, you know, in 4 or 5 years having to do this with like a 4K kind of console or something. I mean, are you kidding me? So I think we are heading toward a more subscription kind of base thing where you buy into a series and you get updates regularly, but you don't, you know, it's not a yearly cycle. And golf is just the absolute first one, I think, that probably will get this kind of treatment just because it makes sense. You don't need to have a year attached to the golf game. You can, you know, charge people whatever you want to charge them, add new courses regularly, you know, have course, you know, have different modes, have different tournaments, kind of do what the golf club is doing in terms of user tournaments and such. And it would just make a lot of sense to do it that way and to have a PGA game officially licensed that is more of a subscription model where people buy into and you get, you know, you get certain courses and such and they get to unlock over time. It would be a whole lot better model for this game.
Hey everybody, we're going to take just a moment here and talk about our friends DraftKings, who are good enough to be sponsoring this week's episode. We appreciate that. You know, DraftKings is the place for your weekly fantasy football. You know, your season-long fantasy football team may be going strong, or like mine, it may be a complete disaster, but you do not have to wait until week 16, or like we've all seen in the past, many, many, many weeks or months after week 16 to get paid. Even if you win, you put your fantasy skills to the test every week this season at DraftKings.com. It's America's favorite one-week fantasy football site. You know, with one-week fantasy football, there are no season-long commitments. It is a brilliant idea. You got an injured player, no problem. It's like a new season every week, and you are never stuck with the same players. And get this, DraftKings is crowning a new millionaire every week this season. That means you could turn your love of football into the payday of a lifetime. You just pick your players, you pile up the points, and you pick up your cash. That's it. Believe me, you have never experienced football like this before. This is not fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. So here's what you do. To help support the show, as well as have a whole lot of fun, you go to DraftKings.com right now and use the promo code PRESS, that's P-R-E-S-S, and play for free with your first deposit in this Sunday's $1 million fantasy football contest, where first place takes home $100,000. That's 100 grand. Enter the code PRESS for free entry now, only at DraftKings.com. That is DraftKings.com. And not to stay negative, because, you know, I'm not a negative guy, but I mean, this comes, it's another question from a listener, and it's sort of on the same general topics that we're talking about. Listener Vigare Cool says, will EA really waste more money and time on a basketball game that has not gained any traction with consumers? Now, when I spoke with Sean O'Brien a few weeks ago on the Hit the Pass radio show, he offered what I thought was a really interesting analogy, right? Which is, you know, in the basketball apparel world, you know, there are like three product makers that make up most of the market. One of them has 90%, you know, but like Under Armour has 5 or 10%, as well as maybe Adidas, right? And you can still, you don't have to be number one to still be able to, you know, have enough of the pie to be a viable product, a profitable product. And again, we don't know how the game has sold. We don't know what it costs to make the game NBA Live. We do know that it's consistently gotten better since its reboot the last couple of years. And we do all, I believe, strongly feel that it is an inferior product to NBA 2K in many ways. So I guess sort of, you know, with that backdrop, and I'll start with you, Brian, you know, you've talked quite a bit about NBA Live, you know, without sort of just saying, oh, it's over, because, you know, we don't have any idea. I mean, what do you think, you know, how has NBA Live fared, and what do you think, what's going to happen with that over the next, you know, year or two? Where's that heading?
Well, it becomes certainly more difficult to justify, because when you mentioned the examples earlier, they're talking billions of dollars and splitting the pie, and some, you know, one company maybe getting 10%. That's fantastic. The problem is that right now NBA Live holds something like 2% of the video game basketball market. As the product gets a little bit better, and if you look at Metacritic scores, it really hasn't gotten that much better. I know we would say it's gotten better, but it constantly gets compared to a game that is far superior to it. So whatever gains that Live makes in quality, it just doesn't stand up.
Not to interrupt, but comparing it to a game that not only is far superior to it, far superior to most video games. Right?
Sure.
Like, yeah, let's be clear. NBA 2K16 is one of the best games of this year, not just sports games.
Right. So it's unlucky in that sense, but it doesn't change the climate that it faces. So, last year it got a Metacritic that averaged somewhere about 57. This year it averages something like 61. So it's gaining a little bit, but it's definitely not gaining traction with consumers as far as sales go, because look, the vast majority of people are not buying two basketball games. If they're going to take $60, they're going to spend it on the safe game that has far more content, and that all their friends are buying, and that everyone recommends, and that has the higher review scores. I mean, Live has everything going against it. So how they continue to justify its development to investors would be interesting at this point, because they can't actually show growth that would prove, hey, if we just hang in there for one or two more years, we're going to have 1 million in sales, and then we're going to have people playing our ultimate team mode, because those people are not there. They're not even close to that point. So it's a very distressing situation as far as that goes. And I'm not sure, you know, I wasn't sure an NBA Live 16 would happen. An NBA Live 17 to me is even less likely.
So, Owen Good, does EA continue NBA? And again, we don't know, right? Is it profitable? Is it a loss? Is it a big loss? Is it a small profit? Is it a big, like, you know, is it break even? What are the costs? We don't know. So let's assume it is not profitable, and let's assume that its sales numbers are insignificant compared to NBA 2K. Does EA continue to look at this as a portfolio play, something that, again, in the broader spectrum of their services like EA Access and such, is just something that is, you know, table stakes, is a cost of doing business as a big time sports game? Or do they, you know, as they examine the way they make the games and the way they service their fans, you know, perhaps, you know, not keeping it going? What do you think's happening?
I mean, I don't know. I've put this question, you know, to any number of executives in the past, and when NBA Live was in greater trouble than it is now. And I there is something in this that EA sees as worth doing. That's the only thing I can say. I know that, you know, Sean O'Brien said last year that not only did he guarantee an NBA Live 16, he guaranteed an NBA Live 17. And I know that that got his PR handler in a lot of trouble. So, you know, he's pretty serious about there at least being another edition on the table here. And whenever I've talked to people like Peter Moore about this, it's always, you know, they've been longtime partners with the league. And, you know, they still see it as something that's worth doing. And I don't know what kind of a licensing deal they have with the league, but when you look at the when you look at the licensing costs that 2K Sports is paying for its game, and justifiably so, okay, you know that is a high quality game that is just has acres of content, and then is probably the best presentation of any sports video game that's out there. But you know, NBA Live, I'm sure in development costs nowhere near what, you know, 2K Sports' title does, and NBA Live does have the Ultimate Team mode, and, you know, I don't think nobody is playing that. I don't think as many people are playing that as EA Sports wants them to. But, you know, we can speculate what all this means in a software as a service model, and who knows what their plans really are there or what their master plan is. But I do think that it does make some sense that if you take a franchise that isn't a numbered franchise like UFC or, you know, PGA, and you put it into EA Access, that adds value to EA Access. And now, you know, again, that's either what is it, $10 a month or $60 a year? Is that what that is? I just signed up. I can't remember what the hell it was.
I think it's 50 a year.
50 or 30 or something.
What are we talking about? EA Access?
EA yes. Access.
It's $5 a month or $30 a year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a great deal.
It's a great deal for the consumer, and it's also, I mean, it's not like how do I articulate this? You know, it's not like you're taking in you're not cannibalizing inventory there. It's just digital copies of things. They certainly can't be resold. So it's like if you've got this in your library of, hey, these are current games, you've come in, maybe you came in for Battlefield Hardline, would you like to see our NBA game? And maybe that gives extra value, you know, because 2K doesn't have this access thing. I mean, they gave out NBA 2K16 3 days early, but that was something else altogether. I think, however, I don't know how EA Access fits in from a revenue standpoint. I think it's been a success. I think it's been a success for consumers, even without the you know, the preview window, which, you know, has been interesting mainly from an industry watcher standpoint, because you get that preview in advance of the embargoes coming up. But I think that NBA fits in more with the access side of things, like Rory McIlroy, as opposed to we need to take, you know, NBA 2K16 head on. And the other thing, and we'll get back to this later, is NBA Live is a lot more it doesn't play as true and it doesn't look as good, but it's a lot more accessible than NBA 2K16.
That's true. There's less to do, though. That's one of the biggest.
That is true. That's a component of it. I acknowledge that. But, you know, my kingdom for a tutorial in NBA 2K16.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. For some context, like we've been saying, we don't have any official sales numbers, but in the weeks after NBA Live came out, I was seeing comments that basically from people basically saying like, I can't get a game in an Ultimate Team because it searches and there are no opponents, or there's nobody to join with me when it searches for people for the Pro-Am, so I can't even play the Pro-Am because there's nobody around to play it. So I was keeping track. I was going in every day kind of around peak time and checking and keeping track of how many users were logged into the game, because it displays it on the main menu. And these are peak times, some weekdays, some weekends. I never saw higher than 172. So 172 people playing at a given time was the most. And that includes anybody that would have happened to be playing through EA Access, or anybody that would have happened to be playing through the demo even. So the numbers are not there for that game. And I think that when you look at the feature set and everything, but the fact that nobody else is playing affects your experience too if you can't find people to play against or with online. And that, you know, that's a really big issue NBA Live has to face, is that there's no one playing.
Chris Sanner, again, going back to the Operation Sports community, what is the community saying about NBA Live? What are the sort of the conversation metrics compared to NBA 2K? And you know, what are people, you know, saying positively or negatively about that game?
I'm pretty sure you're trying to get me banned right now, Rich, because I'm not allowed to talk about NBA Live and NBA 2K in the same sentence. That's against the forum rules. I mean, I'm going to get in a lot of trouble doing this.
Look,
so.
I'm trying to get you suspended again. Just go
with
this, okay?
Okay, that sounds good. But, you know, there's a very – I don't know why, but there's a very passionate and loyal base of people who love NBA Live on our boards. And good for them. I mean, I think the guys kind of hit on it a little bit. It is more accessible in some ways, you know, so the simpler experience is better in some regards for sure. But, you know, overall, I think it's got the same problem that you would see with any game in its situation. There is a huge following NBA 2K on Operation Sports, very passionate. They are, you know, they play the heck out of it. It is easily, you know, it is the cash cow for Operation Sports, so to speak. It and Madden are just, you know, far and above everything else. NBA Live, it's kind of like you have people who are off the beaten path who enjoy that game, and everybody else just kind of, you know, there's not much passion there outside of that very small group. And I think Brian hit on it with just how few people are playing this game online. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, it's great that Sean O'Brien's very passionate and full of vigor, I guess, about the future of the franchise. But I mean, unless they're trying to build something like an EA Access with all these sports games where you can have them all in that library, I don't see any reason why you should keep this game going. I mean, there's no logical reason why you would keep it going. I mean, it's great that you've somewhat improved the last 3 years, but I guarantee you sales haven't really improved in quality. I mean, it's improved, but you know what you mean. As you're improving, NBA 2K is getting better. It's NBA 2K is improving more than you are improving year over year. So you're not exactly catching them. And I don't know what, if any, justification there is for that series to continue.
So, Owen and Chris, we haven't spoken to you since NBA 2K has come out. So let's talk about that for a minute. Owen, have you played NBA 2K16? And if so, what are your impressions of it?
I mean, I have played it. I've gone probably deeper into Living the Dream than I have the other modes. But I have, you know, touched on some of the other things, with the exception of, you know, online play, because I just get my ass kicked there. I guess, you know, the overall impression is, you know, this is a game that is, as everybody's mentioned before, just has so much to do in it, but so much of it assumes a longtime familiarity with this game, especially because they keep changing the controls. And every single year. And as I, you know, I'm going to be straight up and admit it, you know, this is the weakest of the games that I play with any consistency, my own personal game. When I say weakest, it's my weakest game of any that I play with any consistency. And, you know, I can win with basic stuff, but the advanced defense that they've brought in this year makes that less viable. And again, this is on me. It's not on the game. It's good that they do this, but it's like if I were to say, man, Pebble Beach from the Black Tees is a really challenging course. Well, no kidding. It's also a brilliantly designed course. And it's kind of the same thing here. It's just when I back the difficulty down, I can win without doing the complicated things. It doesn't make the complicated things easier to do. That's kind of a curmudgeonly thing to say, I understand. I enjoyed Living the Dream up to a point. I don't think it offers – I think it's a little too dictatorial in how the story unfolds. I think some of the choices in there are just kind of head-scratching. And I also – again, I know I complained about, you know, where is the tutorial mode in this? I think that part of the game would be perfect for it because – you know, you've gone out and you've advertised this to everybody and their grandma. Spike Lee is doing something in this video game which lends enormous mainstream credence, as if NBA 2K didn't already have it, you know, to a sports video game. And people are going to go, hey, I haven't done this in a while, or hey, I haven't done this at all. Maybe I should see what this is all about. And you're just thrown into the deep end. And the high school and college games are a nice little skin on this, but ultimately they're meaningless, and ultimately they do very little to prepare you. And further, the whole thing is set up to that it assumes that you've either you either pre-ordered the game and got that VC bonus. How much was that? I forgot. Is some five figure.
I think it was 10,000 VC.
Well, yeah, that's not a lot, but
are you talking about the special Jordan edition, which had like 35,000?
No, I'm talking about just pre-ordering the main edition, the $60.
Oh man,
edition.
You know, I pre-ordered this and I never even entered my code.
Was it a code? I don't think it was a code. I think it was automatically in your account.
Well, at any rate, it either assumes that you pre-ordered it and you got that bonus, or you're playing a lot in the other modes to accrue the VC necessary to make frequency vibrations into anybody who's worth watching. Because otherwise, you know, a 55 rated guy in high school is going to be okay, but in college it gets real tough. And I got a lot of complaints about this in our tips hand, you know, box too, from newcomers, okay? From newcomers, you know, who felt like it was a pay to win scenario. And I didn't do anything on that because, you know, that would be alarmist, and I think it's also it doesn't reflect the main experience that a lot of people are having, but it is out there for the newcomers who they feel this way. And so I understand and get that. And then, you know, back again to the changed controls. It's like the post moves now have gone to a different button and they're more necessary. And I don't really play a lot of the post game, but, you know, if it was ever said, hey, you know, your post moves are now on the left trigger, or is it the bumper? I forget. I missed that. I missed that memo. So those are where my disappointments and my criticisms of NBA 2K come in. It's like they don't feel like they're legitimate criticisms because the rest of the game, I mean, my God, what they do with their presentation is just incredible. You know, this is a sports broadcast. This isn't like just this isn't fooling around with replicating camera angles like whatever Madden is doing, and Madden does a pretty good job with that. Although, you know, I don't think much of what Nance is doing with his commentary. This thing is like you could put this on in a sports bar and fool a lot of people. And then there's the pro am, which unlike as we've mentioned NBA Live actually has people in it. Even if you're not playing, I guess, in the, you know, Rucker Park or West Fifth or whatever, it is an intimidatingly deep game, I guess. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, for the inch deep, mile wide guy like me who plays a lot of different things and settles on one or two, you know, this would be something that if I was a civilian and I bought one game a year and I was a dedicated basketball fan, I mean, I wouldn't need anything else for the remainder of the year. I mean, I would skip Fallout. I would skip Assassin's Creed. I would skip Call of Duty, and I would probably skip Star Wars. But I have so many other things pulling on my attention that what I do give to NBA, I'm still sort of, you know, in the shallow end going, how do I make this work? Because I feel like I have to execute a Hadouken in order to do a hesitation to crossover, where it's a lot simpler in NBA Live. Doesn't look as good, but it's a lot simpler.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My treadmill game right now is NBA 2K, and the mode that I'm playing on my treadmill is the career mode, you know, the single player. So I got, you know, past the first year now, well into year two, and my guy is still terrible. Still absolutely terrible. Like, you get, you know, maybe 6 points a game, and that's lucky because he can't shoot. Like, I take open shots, and I hit the timing really well, and he just misses. You know, and I don't know, probably about 20 games into year two, maybe. I've been traveling a lot, so I haven't been playing as much. But, I mean, he's in the low 60s right now.
Oh, Rich, you're going to ruin our Pro-Am team.
I know, I am. Sorry. But it'll be great comedy, at least. So, you know, I'm and the approach that I had taken in years past was to, whenever I could, use my VC just to like really pump up one of the attributes, or not attributes, but sort of sections of attributes, you know, which for my
skill
guy
sets,
who's a two guard, was always the shooting. So I did that, and, you know, he's got by far the most of that, but he's just been so bad. I'm like, well, you know, maybe take a few of these and put them in some of the other you know, in the other sections. But it doesn't matter. Like, he's like a 62 or 63. He's terrible. He can't do anything. And by year two of every other one of my careers in NBA 2K, my dude was good, right? He was averaging 20-plus points a game. He was getting a few assists a game. He was making all-star teams. And so not only is my guy terrible, but my team is terrible. I'm not having a bad experience, but it's a very different experience because of exactly what you said, Owen. I mean, not only is my guy low-rated, but, you know, it takes me two or three games to get enough VC to pump up an attribute 1 point, which, you know, so I'll be very interested to see where I am, both in my skill numbers and my overall, as well as my season averages by the time I get to the end. Because right now it's just, he's just bad. And well, that's, you know, I don't buy VC.
That's why they want you to buy VC, Rich. I know. Because the funny thing about that is once you buy VC and get your guy up to a respectable level, then he starts to earn more VC in games because, like, you know, your passes stop getting stolen by everybody. You get some rebounds. You get your assists. You get your teammate grade up. You score points, so you get your performance grade up. Then you earn more VC each game. So it's like a catch-22. It's almost like you got to buy some before you can earn it.
But I'm just not going to buy VC. I've never bought currency in any game ever, you know, and I guess it's a personal principle. I mean, you know, it's not like I'm walking around saying it, but I just don't do it. To me, spending $60 for these games is enough. And I'm not going to say I'm never going to do it because I don't know. Maybe I will. It's strange. Chris Sander, have you played NBA 2K16? And if so, what has your personal experience been?
Well, I mean, I'm going to piggyback off of what Owen said here. Just 1 second. I'll give my general impressions first. The game's great. I mean, it really is. Everything about it, it screams a great, deep NBA sim. There's plenty of options. If you're a basketball nut and you have the time to learn all the controls and such, you're not going to find a game that controls better and plays better than NBA 2K. I mean, there's nothing negative I can say about it, especially now that we've got Pro-Am working, and I hear the OS team that those guys have put together is like getting beat regularly, like 40-50 points. So that's cool. That's working. But I think the thing, and what Owen is touching on, is something I've been paying attention to for the past few years, and I think everybody else here has too. I'm wondering, and this, what I'm about to say is going to be incredibly unpopular too, especially with the community. I think developers are listening to the wrong people when they're making these games. I mean, honestly, I think it's great that a small vocal minority in the online community has their ear and they listen to us. I mean, that's really great. But when it comes to the average Joe, they don't need, you know, 50 different ways to do a post move kind of thing. They don't need that kind of control. They need a button.
So Chris, if they're listening to the wrong people, why are the sales continue to break records every year? I mean, whatever they're doing is resonating with a wide audience, not just the ultra sim audience.
Well, I would say this is one of those things that in the future may turn out to bite them in the butt, so to speak, in terms mm-hmm. of maybe it gets so deep that you get to the point people just say, no, I'm not going to do that. So you know what I'm saying? It's just, I think at a point, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't offer these either. That's the thing. I think that I'm beginning to wonder if sports games are getting to be too complex for their own good, to where they appeal to a certain segment of the audience, which that's great. The people that they appeal to, people like me, you, everybody else. But the average person, you know, they were fine with Tecmo Bowl, so to speak, if that makes sense. A lot of people. And I'm just beginning to wonder if maybe in the future that these games get to a point where they're just so complex that the average person just says, you know what, I'm going to go play this shooter or, you know, something else. I think, you know, FIFA is the best example of a game that really is simple to pick up and play. I mean, just how, you know, you can jump in, you can push a couple buttons and everybody's happy. And
if I can butt in here, I think it's a kind of Stockholm syndrome. I think people go, you know, I want a good game. This is a good game. Everyone says it's a good game. You know, that's all, not only in the marketing, but also in the, you know, the critical appraisals. I'm a basketball fan. I want to play basketball. And then they go, well, I don't really get this, or I'm not really deep into this, or I can't access, you know, all of the portions of this. But I must be the problem because this is a good game. And you know, I mean, that's a that's a highly anecdotal, you know, rationale for why people who otherwise would be the ones who aren't listened to when this game is designed, why they would continue to keep buying it. But I think it does hold some water because in some way it's how I feel about this game. I sit down and I go, man, I really want to play, you know, the Charlotte Hornets against the Indiana Pacers. And then, you know, it's 18-2 in the first quarter and I'm playing on, you know, I'm playing on all-star difficulty. And I go, well, I guess I need to play on rookie. And then, you know, as I said, you know, when you back the difficulty down in this game, it's not that it makes the complicated things easier. It just makes them less necessary. And then you go, well, I can sort of blunder through this. And I do think it's a lot of people go, this is a good game. I've been told this is a good game. This is, you know, the most decorated game of its time over the past 15 years. And if I don't get it, I must be the problem. And at some point, that's going to come to a head.
Well, I think I think that's probably true of gameplay, but then they keep adding these features that cover that up. It's like, oh, well, now we've got a Spike Lee story mode, or man, now we've got college teams in there, or any number of big features they add in.
Well, that will attract people to the game, but it doesn't. Once they get there, they're still in the deep end with everybody else.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at, is that it's probably disguising that general feeling that's out there, which is probably that it's a little too complicated, a little too complex. When you look at some things that NBA Live does well, I played NBA Live quite a bit so that I could do a review on it, and I was like, okay, if NBA 2K took NBA Live's shot meter, if they took their play calling system, and if they took, you know, the right stick dribbling that we're all so used to, NBA 2K would be almost perfect. Like those are just some things that were more simple over there, easier to utilize and easier to understand and learn. And I think you guys are on to that exactly right. And it's just a matter of, man, there's so much content in the game that it disguises that sense that's out there.
But what about the other side, which is the sales of the game continue to go up every single year, right? Every year it sells more than it did the year before, and every year it gets more complex and more detailed, and every year they add more things in from their core community as far as gameplay and how the players react and the controls. So you could say that everything that we're saying might sound right, but is actually completely wrong.
Well, what I'll say to that is, like, in economics, I mean, it's the same thing with any company you ever see. Well, I mean, they're going up, so they're obviously always going to be going up. What they're doing is working. It's always going to work. This will never go down. In reality, you can see the cracks in the foundation. You can see why this is going to – you can see the downfall coming. You know, you can see this kind of thing happen. And I think it's going to get to a point where – there's going to be a line crossed. I don't know where it's at, but if you go, I think sports games have to strive to appear as realistic as possible without actually forcing you to, you know, go through. There's only so many buttons on a controller, I guess is the best way to put it. And if you try to put too many combinations in, there's a reason why fighting games are, you know, aren't nearly as popular as they used to be, you know, that sort of thing. It's just, I just think at some point you're going to see a game like NBA 2K, despite the fact that it is an incredible simulation. The options are immense. I'm not taking anything away from that. I don't think – I mean, anybody listening to this should not take that. I don't think it's a good game. It's a great game. I mean, it really is as far as what they've done. Now, as far as how accessible is it to a common person, to someone such as my brother who rarely, if ever, plays video games, when he jumps on to play you know, he's not buying this game. He's never going to buy this game. And I think they're narrowing their market down. And in terms of design, you know, there's some really great minds out there that basically say that, you know, the simplest but most elegant way is the best way. And to me, it just seems like if you're throwing in, you know, 50 button combinations, you're constantly having to tweak the controls. I mean, I think at some point this is going to cross a line where people finally say, and this is on the fringes, you know what, this was fun, but this is just too much for me.
You know, it's interesting because I'm doing like four different things in NBA, right? I'm playing the online, you know, the Play Now online, and I've graduated a couple of times. I'm playing a franchise. I'm playing my career. My franchise. Now, granted, I have a bad team. The Brooklyn Nets are a bad basketball team. I'm 0-7. I've never been 0-7. Even last year, you know, I actually won the title with Brooklyn. Granted, I made some trades and stuff, you know, and I just can't do this year what I did last year playing 5-on-5 basketball because, as you said, Owen, the defense is right on you. Like, you Scott O'Gallagher, you know, he said, when you play this game, you're playing me on defense. I don't like him anymore. Scott, I'm talking to you clearly. I don't like you. You're mean because my basketball team is terrible because your defense is so that they just he's on me every time coming down the court. I have no room to breathe. I can't move around anything. I feel like I have to execute every play perfectly. And, you know, it's interesting. I think a lot of people really like that. Certainly, I know a lot of people really like that. But, yeah, for it's not just the controls this year. It's also the fact that the game is smarter, which appeals to many people. But, boy, this game really does punish you if you, A, don't know what you're doing, and, B, aren't willing to take the time to learn that. Now, I will give credit where credit's due. Dzar, you know, Nino Samuel, who has been on the show, he's been putting tutorials. He's actually going to be doing some live tutorials with me on Hit the Pass over the next few weeks. So we're going to bring him in so he can show us, you know, in some videos, some good stuff to do. So I give them credit. So the stuff that's not in the game, they're reaching out to do, but clearly they need to do that because, you know, I'm sure they're doing that because they're hearing things like that. So very interesting where, you know, I'm not entirely sure that you're right, Chris, when you talk about, you know, it's going to come a point where it's too much because I think all video games, you know, we focus on sports video games, but all video games, well, not all, but many big-time video games are completely impenetrable to those who are not into video games anymore, whether it's a game like Assassin's Creed or The Witcher, or whether it's a game like NBA 2K or MLB The Show. You know, AAA video games are a language unto themselves, and they sell well and they do well, but, you know, it's a very different thing than it used to be. They are not for the masses. They are for the specifics, although it appears that at least these days with the great sales numbers of the PS4 and the Xbox One and the big-time sales numbers of a lot of these games, maybe that is the right mix.
But I don't mean to belabor this, but when you talk about a franchise like The Witcher, yeah, you know, it's, you know, something that I haven't gotten into because there's so much lore behind it. But, you know, the knowledge of The Witcher's story, it doesn't affect how I play the game. The controls in The Witcher are pretty simple. I mean, we're not talking about Bloodborne or Dark Souls or something that's, you know, designed to be brutally tough. Sports video games assume, especially like NBA 2K, assume knowledge not only of the sport and how it is properly played, and don't discount that, but also how you properly play it within that environment. You know, the only other thing that I would say, I mean, Assassin's Creed is not a hard game. It might be, you know, intimidating because there's just so much to do and there's so much of a grind in the side missions and things like that, but that's something else altogether. Sports video games are... I think they're still a special class among the AAA games in how much they expect of the player coming into it before you even begin.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. And I would also say that just, you know, something that I used to struggle with for years was watching international soccer, right? So when I would watch anything other than the World Cup, like when I would watch a Premier League match or a La Liga match, you know, or even read about them, you know, on the web, there's a innate understanding that the broadcasters and the writers expect from their audience. And it wasn't until I went to England in 2012 for a week and I just asked the people that I was working with all sorts of questions about the Premier League and what these different things mean and stuff, that I got that grounding to where now when I watch the Premier League or international football, I completely understand the context. So I think sports in general, for the most part, has that, and video games, sports video games are just a reflection of that as a whole. It's very difficult for somebody, you know, if you never watched a baseball game and you start watching the baseball playoffs, they don't explain the rules to you, what's going on. They're just talking to you like you know what's happening. So, And again, I'm not saying you're wrong. You're clearly right. It's interesting for sure. You know, how much do they take upon themselves to explain and how much and train and how much do they just expect the you know, how much do they expect the audience to figure it out? Well, all right. One other thing. I don't know if you guys have been watching, but the Major League Baseball playoffs are spectacular. I'm, you know, win or lose, whether my, you know, Mets win or lose. Obviously, Chris is a big Rangers fan, had a tough, you know, 5-game series with the Blue Jays. But the atmosphere at these games in Kansas City and Houston and in Toronto and in Texas and in New York and Los Angeles and in Chicago and St. Louis, it's been amazing. Now, I play, as you guys know, I play a lot of MLB The Show. And in fact, right now in my sort of mirroring the Mets season, I'm playing the playoffs. And MLB The Show does a pretty good job of the atmosphere in the playoffs. They have the nice graphics for like the NLDS. The crowd has definitely got the towels waving. You know, they got the bunting. They do a nice job. But I'm telling you, the atmosphere in these real world ballparks has been really just spectacular. And we got a question from a listener on Twitter, the 16643. He says, can we get MLB to emulate the atmosphere from the Blue Jays game 5? And obviously he's talking specifically about a game. But, you know, MLB The Show does a pretty good job. But, you know, we've talked about it before. You know, they're just not all the way there. They haven't, nobody else really is all the way there with the atmosphere. Brian, I'm curious what you think about this and you know, what the sort of things that can be done to really amp up the, you know, the playoff style presentations in these games.
Yeah, so using the Blue Jays Rangers game as an example, there's a lot of stuff that happened in that game that you can't imagine would happen in any game. So it's difficult for, you know, Sony to replicate weird events and reactions to them. One thing from simulating playoff games that I noticed was, yeah, the crowd is more into the games and everything, but the announcers don't, the urgency isn't there from the announcers. You don't get the sense, you know, every inning ends with them just being like, okay, that's the end of the inning, on to the next. You don't get the sense that there's any weight to these playoff games than a regular season game. So I think that's an issue there. And then maybe we do need weird events happening in games every once in a while. That would just be a really difficult thing to program in. Plus, they're probably not allowed to show benches clearing, even if there's no fight allowed. I mean, and some of that emotion is what was involved there.
Now, hold on a second, Brian. You're saying that we should not expect Sony's The Show to be able to replicate the catcher throwing the ball accidentally off the bat when he's trying to get it back to the pitcher and having a run score in a tie game? Come on, man. I mean, anybody should be able to do that.
Well, and then what we do need, though, is some kind of way to trigger our own bat flips. I really want, like, we have controllable celebrations, right, in FIFA. What we need is, you know, what kind of bat flip do you want after your home run? Because that would be, and I really mean this, that would be fun. They're not going to do it, but that would be fun for like an online game against a friend or something where you hit a big home run and then you just, you know, taunt them with a really sweet bat flip.
And a lot more disconnections. Owen, you have some thoughts on this too, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yes, there are celebrations, FIFA, Madden, et cetera, but they're all abused. I mean, they're all spammed. I mean, you know, people celebrate like, you know, they just won the World Cup when they go up 6-1 on a friend. And people would be spamming the Jose Bautista bat flip, you know, when they go up, you know, 4-0 in the third inning on a friend. What made that a moment was just all of the anger and the angst that preceded it.
Right.
And I think that's just, you just have to accept that that is the dividing line between sports and reality and sports video games. I mean, I have had many emotional games, obviously, happy to share them, talk about them with people, but it's also a little bit like talking about your rotisserie team and nobody, do we even call them that anymore? Or is actually, no, can we call them fantasy league, or is that like a criminal act now?
yeah, the FBI investigating.
Exactly. But you know, the thing, I mean, the Bautista bat flip was just everything I wanted it to be. When I saw that happen, it was like, that is exactly how every single person would respond in the same situation, and you are a liar if you say otherwise. And I don't think that I think actually I have seen benches clear. You can't see fighting, but I think I saw an MVP baseball, which of course was a decade ago. You know, they had a benches clearing animation. But they walk right up to a line, but there's just, there's no way to really replicate that kind of thing. And then, you know, more to your point, you know, Rich, what you're talking about, or Brian, what you're talking about with the broadcast is it's really got to come from that. I think we all, you know what the Fox Sports presentation has been over the years, with the, you know, the nonstop close-ups, and the fans, you know, crossing their fingers three times, and God knows we're going to see a ton of that when the Cubs play whoever it's going to be, you know, in the NLCS. And you know, the show doesn't do anything like that. The show's presentation is we make a very good-looking game of baseball, and then we just sort of skin some broadcast around it. But, you know, the visual fidelity, or excuse me, the glamour of this game is within the game itself, not in the broadcast package.
The irony is that feature points for MLB 15, the show, was player emotion. And I hardly ever saw any of that throughout the year of playing. There's very little of it.
I saw it more in the pitchers. I saw it in my pitcher a lot. But
walking off the mound with pumping a fist or something.
And actually, if I could – here's something I forgot to say. You know, this thing about Russell Martin hitting the bat with the throwback to the mound, if that happened in a video game, it would be a glitch video on YouTube. People would go, hey, look at this stupid thing that happened. And if it happened to you, in other words, the run was scored against you, you'd rage quit. You wouldn't even get to the Bautista home run. You know, so that, I think, is the bigger dividing line between reality and the goofy stuff that always seems to happen in baseball in October and your video game.
Well, I love the show. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, anything that they do to the core game is, you know, it's just going to continue to make it better. Like I said, you know, I was playing the game four of my division series today, and I was very impressed by the presentation, the lead in, you know, the graphics, the, you know, it's painted correctly on the field. The crowd is going nuts, but it definitely doesn't, like you say, doesn't take it to that extra level. It's certainly better than it was a few years ago. But I, you know, there's also some cool stuff that I think that they could do there as well. You know, my issue with the show, as I mentioned before, is they have to do something with the Road to the Show mode, something to make it more compelling, because it's been the same thing for so long. But I've said that plenty, so I don't need to go further into that. All right, Chris Sander, your thoughts on the show, and also, you know, as the playoffs have been going on, have you noticed an uptick in people playing the show? Because I certainly have had a bunch of people tweeting at me that they're playing it more these days. Are you seeing the same thing in the OS community, and perhaps even yourself?
Yeah, definitely you're seeing more people play it. And, you know, people are excited about baseball, and rightfully so. It's been a great postseason so far. The thing that sports games definitely, I think that's really where sports games have missed the boat a little bit, is in the crowd reactions and, you know, the emotion of the game. I really feel like that's kind of the final frontier that sports games really have to conquer to get this thing on the other end. You know, the emotion of hitting a home run and the announcers reacting correctly in the seventh inning after so much turmoil in the game, and having those storylines play out. So I don't know if that's something that'll happen anytime soon. I mean, I really don't, because that's a very complex thing to do, and that is really what separates the real sports from the digital ones right now. But yeah, I think that, you know, if we can, it would be great to get our sports games doing this, and, you know, having MLB the Show really, really get down to the emotion and the really the just this anticipation, the nervousness. I mean, you know about it, Rich. You know, every pitch, it's just like
agonizing.
Yeah,
it's agonizing.
I mean, in baseball, in the postseason, I mean, it hinges on every pitch.
From the first inning to the last, too. Like, it's not just seventh inning on. It's like second inning last night. I'm like biting my nails.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, just with the Rangers and their postseason runs the last, you know, half decade, you learn. I mean, the thing I learned that first year, because, you know, it'd been a decade since the Rangers had made the playoffs before that. But anytime you get a chance to score a run in the postseason and you don't, it comes back to bite you
every
some way.
Time. Absolutely.
So it's just, and that's with any sport. It's just, you need to have that sort of depth of, you know, just emotion and really anticipation, and really just in some ways panic. You know, we screwed this up. We got to make it up somehow. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we really are missing in sports games. And I hope that developers really, instead of creating, to go back to what we talked about earlier, instead of creating new button combinations, I would rather a developer spend a whole cycle on working on the emotion and announcing and crowd swells and all that stuff, because that would make the game feel a whole lot more realistic than all that other stuff, because it's already there for the most part.
Well, all right. I want to thank Owen Good from Polygon, Chris Channer from Operation Sports, and Brian Weedeye from Pasta Padre and Hit the Pass. It's been a lot of fun. I want to thank you, our listeners, as always. Much appreciated for continuing to support the show. And you know how to continue to support. Subscribe to it on iTunes and Stitcher. Give us a nice rating. Do all those things that you do. Provide us some comments on the post on Operation Sports. And just give us some love, because we appreciate that. We really enjoy putting this show out every week for you, and we look forward to continuing to do it for a long time. So thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, listeners. We will talk to you again real soon. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast. We'd like to invite you to go check out hitthepass.com, a website all about the sports games of today, yesterday, and tomorrow. We've got video, we've got audio, we've got written pieces, all about the sports games that we love. On behalf of everybody from Hit the Pass and the Press Row Podcast, thanks.